Bandeham Sri Guru Sri Sutta.
The following is a class on Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 25, Texts 1 and 2, given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on March 24, 1993, in Mumbai.
श्रीशुक उवाच
इन्द्रस्तदात्मना भूजं विज्ञाय विहितं नृपा गोपेभ्यः कृष्णनाथेभ्यो नन्दादिभ्यश्च गोपः Shukadev Goswami said, My dear King Parikshit, when Indra understood that his sacrifice had been put aside, he became furious with Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men who were accepting Krishna as their Lord. Purport. At the very beginning of this chapter, Shukadev Goswami reveals the foolishness of Indra and the absurdity of his anger. Indra was frustrated because the residents of Vrindavan accepted Sri Krishna as their Lord. But the simple fact is that Sri Krishna is the Lord, not only of the residents of Vrindavan, but of all that exists, including Indra himself. Thus, Indra's petulant reaction was ridiculous. As the common saying goes, pride goes before a fall. Ganam sanvartakam nama meghanam chantakarinam intra prachodayat krudho vakyam vahesha manyata. Angry Indra sent forth the clouds of universal destruction, known as sanvartaka. Imagining himself to be the supreme controller, he spoke as follows. Report. The word Isha Mani is very significant here. Indra arrogantly considered himself to be the Lord, and thus he exhibited the typical attitude of a conditioned soul. Many thinkers in the 20th century have noticed the exaggerated sense of individual prestige characteristic of our culture. Indeed, writers have even coined the phrase, the me generation. Everyone in this world is more or less guilty of the syndrome called Isha Mana, or proudly considering oneself the Lord.
Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunais Kalmani Sarabasha Ahankara Vimudhatma Karataham Iti Samyate. Janasya Moho Yamaham Mameti.
The basic root cause of all material bondage and suffering is this false conception that I am this body. Those things in relationship to this body are mine, and that I am the doer, the performer of my activities. I am the controller of my surroundings, and ultimately, I am the enjoyer. This is the influence of Maya, or illusion.
Bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarvalokameheshwaram suhridam sarvabhutanam yatvamam shantim
rachchati. Peace can only be attained when we recognize that Krishna is the Lord. Krishna is the only controller, the supreme controller. Krishna is the proprietor of everything that exists. And Krishna is the only enjoyer. And everything and everyone is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. This philosophy is the greatest threat. It is the greatest opposition to the egoistic way of thinking that is prevailing everything and everyone in this world. And we find that within this creation, everyone is subject to the influence of this Maya potency. Even the insignificant insect. At night, sometimes the mosquito disturbs us. What is the motivation of this mosquito? That I am the enjoyer and I am the controller. Your blood is not your blood, it is my blood. This is their illusion. The blood throwing through your veins, the mosquito is claiming proprietorship to. This is my blood to enjoy. And infatuated by this consciousness comes to sting you, to bite you, and to drink your blood. But actually, all the problems of this world are due to this mosquito-type consciousness. When human beings adopt this consciousness, see what type of terrible problems arise from it. Crime, wars, terrible violence, hatred, envy, terrorism. When a human being does not come above the mentality of this foolish mosquito, this is the result. I am this body, I am the controller, I am the proprietor, I am the enjoyer. But from this insignificant mosquito, through all the various 8,400,000 species of life, up to Lord Indra himself, the King of Heaven, people are subject to this infection. Indra was thinking that I am the controller, I am the Lord, and I am the enjoyer. And he had such incredibly great power, just as factually the mosquito has power. He can fly, he can see, he can attack when you're sleeping, when you don't even know it. He has a little bit of a germ called malaria. He can put you down, even cause your death. Every living creature in this universe has power. It is a fact. And every living creature in this universe has some power over other living beings. The mosquito is thinking, I am the Lord. And Indra, such a highly sophisticated living being, far above human beings. The birth of Indra is a very, very high existence, superior to human life by all material considerations. And he too is thinking, I am the Lord, I have great powers, and I am the enjoyer. Therefore, Nanda Maharaj was performing the Indra Yajna for the satisfaction of Indra. And as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, for those in the bodily concept of life who have been honored, dishonor is worse than death. We become spoiled when we become accustomed to getting our way. And this is a great, great defect. When we become conditioned to getting what we expect or what we want, it completely spoils and ruins our consciousness. There is a saying, spoil the child and spare the rod. You have heard? The greatest disservice a parent can do to a child is to give it whatever it wants. Because what you're doing through this process is you're creating an atmosphere in that child's consciousness that will make it miserable till the day it dies. Because if we are expecting that we're going to always get what we want, then we're totally frustrated and miserable when we don't get our way. And the fact is, the ways in this world is you will not always get your ways. If a child is not expecting much, knows that whatever it gets is grateful for, then the child can be peaceful in any situation of life, throughout its life. It is a fact. As long as you're expecting something, you cannot be grateful. You're not grateful for something you expect. You're grateful for something that you feel you don't deserve, but it's come anyway. And with that grateful type of consciousness, if you do not get it, you think, oh, very nice. It's all right. I don't need it anyway. I don't deserve it anyway. Therefore, in that consciousness, you're peaceful. And without being grateful, you cannot understand what is bhakti. We should be grateful for anything God gives us. The sufferings as well as the pleasures, the successes and the failures. When we talk about being spoiled, it means you're expecting to get whatever you want and you get it. And it's a perfect word, spoil. Your life is spoiled if you're in this consciousness. It's childishness. In this particular chapter of Bhagavatam, we find Indra in this childish consciousness of being spoiled. That for so many years, the Brijbasis have been offering me yajna for my enjoyment, and I'm conditioned to accept it. And here comes the year when they're not offering it to me, they're offering it to somebody else, because he had such a spoiled consciousness of getting his way, always. Instead of just saying, oh, I don't deserve it anyway. Oh, it's Krishna's mercy. I'm grateful when it comes. If it doesn't come, that is also wonderful. Let me just chant Hare Krishna. That is the greatest wealth. No, he was angry. He was furious. Just like a child who is spoiled to always get its way. If you don't give that child its way, it becomes furious with anger. And if you do give it, child isn't grateful. Child just thinks, yes, this is what I deserve. Huh? So Indra was like this. He was furious. He was so angry that according to his capacity, he wanted to use all of his powers to destroy everyone in Vrindavan, to kill them and destroy all their property. Simply because they interfered with his sense gratification. This is material consciousness. People are so egocentric. They are so self-centered that to fulfill their own purposes for sense gratification, they're willing to cause pain to the point of even death of other living beings. Just see how contrary this idea is to the very principle and the nature of the soul. The soul is part of Krishna. Tatikshiva karuna kasura dasaravade. The nature of the soul is to be compassionate, to be merciful, to be tolerant, to be equipoised, to be peaceful and loving, because the soul is part of Krishna. The godly qualities of God Himself are within the heart of every living being. But when we identify with this body and this mind, and we allow ourselves to fall victim to this kind of false pride, just see. We become merciful and compassionate and kind only when behaving in that way is conducive to our sense gratification. We become such a friendly, loving well-wisher to others because we want them to love us back. We want them to say nice things about us. And therefore, we're investing so many nice, sweet words and apparent compassionate offerings to someone only so that we will get what we want in return. But if that person neglects us or ignores us or does not give us the sense gratification we expect, we're ready to destroy them. In the Western world, 70% of marriages end in divorce within 3 years. Why? 1 minute, you're saying the sweetest, most loving, nice words to your beloved, and you're ready to offer all services. You'll do anything for them. Because you're thinking, that person will give me the sense gratification that I want. So that means ultimately, you've never done anything for that person. You've done everything only for yourself. And you're speaking sweet words, and you're doing so many nice things, and doing so much service, and even going out of your way to make that person happy, not for that person, but for your own self, your own greedy, fastidious ego. That's all. And as soon as that person does not reciprocate and give you the proper sense gratification that you expect, divorce. Divorce means you become enemies. You're trying to get as much as you can from the other. And the divorce courts are the most terrible, gruesome courts in America, worse than murder courts. What people say about each other and how people hate each other and the terrible accusations they make of each other. Because your sense gratification is frustrated, we turn against that person. Want to destroy them, want to get as much as we can from them. Factually, that's all we ever wanted. That's material consciousness. But the soul is by nature selfless. This is what we mean by sacrifice. To make sacred by offering for the pleasure of the beloved. Sacrifice means, in its true sense, to selflessly serve for the benefit and the pleasure of others without any expectation in return. Yesterday at the airport in Delhi, one of the most famous bhajan singers in all of India. We spoke together for quite a while, between half hour and an hour we sat and spoke together. And because he sings Krishna's bhajans, he has a real sense of some piety and some spiritual understanding. This man travels all over the world chanting bhajans. So he was telling me very honestly, he said, when I go to a hall with so many tens and thousands of people to hear me, to sing bhajans, when I'm getting paid for it, I get no satisfaction. No matter how many people are paying me and listening to me, there is no gratification whatsoever. It's simply dry business. He says, and when I'm singing the bhajans in this auditorium or this stadium and I'm getting paid for it, he said, I can feel no emotion in what I'm singing. There's no feeling in what I'm offering to Krishna. He said, but when I do it as a service for your temple or for some other very worthy charitable cause, he said, when I'm singing, I actually feel some emotion for Krishna. And I feel great satisfaction in what I'm doing because I'm not expecting anything in return. It is a fact. The more you expect in return from what you're doing, the more your heart feels the loneliness and emptiness. Although your ego may be being fed tremendously with gratification, your heart remains void of any meaning. Because the constitutional position of the soul is to be a selfless, unmotivated, uninterrupted servant. The very nature and essential condition of the soul is that of sacrifice. Bhoktaram yajna tapasam. Krishna says, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifice. What does that verse mean? That means every jivatma is meant simply to live as a sacrifice for Krishna. Through one's body, one's words, one's mind, and one's very life. It is all meant to be a humble offering for the pleasure of God. But unfortunately, we are so much contaminated with this spirit to enjoy, to be recognized, to obtain. Recently at New Vrindavan, there was an interfaith conference, and this one French lady, she was there. And at the end of the conference, she was weeping. And she said to me that throughout my life, I've been so frustrated because anything I see that I like, I want to possess it. She's an artist. When she sees a nice painting, her satisfaction is if she can own it and have it in her house. Or if she sees something else, whatever she sees, her gratification was, I must possess it to enjoy it. But she said, after associating with devotees, I can see that you people have nothing. And you're enjoying everything. You're enjoying the sky, you're enjoying the trees, you're enjoying everybody else's homes, you're enjoying everything. And you don't have to work for it, and you don't have to protect it. You don't have to be in anxiety about it. She said, you're simply enjoying that Krishna owns everything, and you're part of him. She said, this is a new light in my life. There's no need to possess, to be the proprietor of anything or anyone, but to simply appreciate the glory of Krishna, how he is the controller, he is the proprietor, he is the enjoyer of everything. This is the nature of the soul. And therefore, such a personality can be peaceful. You see, when Krishna means he can be peaceful, try to analyze it in this way, in order to relate to it to our own life. When we have everything we want, and everything is going our way, there's some sense of peace. It's not real peace, but there's some superficial sense of peace. But as soon as things do not go your way, there's turmoil from within and without. Your mind and senses go crazy with anger, frustration, envy. But Krishna is saying, if you accept that everything is the property of him, then even if everything goes completely opposite all your plans and expectations, Krishna, this is your will, this is perfect. This is your perfect arrangement. And I love you for whatever you do. That is peace. That consciousness is real peace. The impersonal philosophers, their idea of peace is to completely nullify any emotions or sentiments within your own heart. To completely empty your consciousness of any feelings, to become callous and hard to every situation of life, that is considered to be renunciation. Therefore, whatever happens, it doesn't matter because it's all an illusion. But the bhaktas, their idea of renunciation and peace is much different. For the bhakta, we purify our emotions. We purify with supersensitivity our feelings. They are all simply offerings of love for Krishna. They are all simply acknowledging the love of Krishna in every situation. Therefore, Ashlisya Vapadratam Manashtumam Adarshanam Marmahatam Kuroti Yatatatatabhatatatu Lampatomat Prananatastu Sa Eva Naparaha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us this principle that, my Lord, if you like, you can give me the ultimate satisfaction of embracing me with your own loving arms. Or if you like, you can trample upon me with your feet and cause great pain and break every bone in my body. And even worse than that, crush my ego. Or if you like, you can make me brokenhearted by utterly neglecting me. You have every right to deal with me in any way you please, because I am your servant unconditionally. That you are the God of love, and nothing emanates from you except love. And there's nothing that you can possibly do that is not born of your love. Therefore, whatever comes into my life is the perfect arrangement of your love, and I'm grateful. Anything. I am meant for your pleasure. The only possession that I aspire for is the position of being your selfless servant. But we find here that this great, great disease that is keeping us from this loving reciprocation with Krishna, it is so strong, it is so deeply rooted in our hearts, it is so all-pervading within this material world. And therefore it is explained here that what has happened between Krishna and Indra is very, very instructive and symbolic to everyone's life. Because we are all like tiny little Indras. We are all spoiled little children, thinking in terms of I and mine and expecting our own sense gratification out of whatever we do. Expecting others to honor us and worship us and recognize us. This is the mentality of Indra in this condition. But Krishna's mercy upon Indra, you have to know that Krishna performed this Govardhan Leela for several reasons, which we will discuss in the future. But one specific and prominent reason in which Krishna did this whole Leela was to show mercy to Indra, to purify him, to bring him to the standard of real devotion. Indra was a devotee. Indra was not just a karmi. Indra was performing all of his activities as the ruler of the heavens as a service to Krishna. Dharamasyaphyabhavaragyasya naratatayopakalpati naratasya dharamakantasya kamulabhaya hismrita. Krishna warns us in the Bhagavatam that even in the execution of your devotional service, what you obtain through your service to the Lord, never consider it yours and never try to enjoy it. It's all for Krishna. So Indra is doing his service for Krishna. He is a devotee, and he's a wonderful devotee, but somehow or other, he got bewildered by all of the opportunities for enjoyment that came as a result of his service to Krishna. It is a fact. Sometimes when we perform nice devotional service, people give us prestige, people give us recognition, people give us money, people give us luxurious facilities. If we think any of those are myself for my own enjoyment, we are fallen from the standard of real Krishna consciousness. And Krishna's mercy is he purifies us from that situation by intervening. Krishna intervened in the life of Indra. The cowherd man had everything organized in such an elegant way to worship Indra, and Krishna just intervened, this little seven-year-old child. He just came in, Nanda Maharaj, don't offer this to Indra, offer it to Giriraj, Govardhan Hill. And Krishna was so expert in his talking that Nanda Maharaj had to do whatever he wanted. So in this way, Krishna intervened. Krishna spoiled all Indra's sense gratification. Purposely, out of mercy. Indra couldn't understand it at the beginning. He reacted with rage, violence. But after Krishna lifts the Govardhan Hill, then Indra realized, my God, what have I done? His ego became sober. It became purified by the pain and frustration he had to endure. And then he fell at the lotus feet of Krishna. So in the same way, we should know, Indra suffered. Indra suffered when Krishna did this to him. He suffered terribly. Physical infliction of pain is bad, but infliction of pain upon the ego is far, far more difficult to endure. Krishna inflicted terrible, terrible suffering upon the mind of Indra by what he did. But Indra ultimately understood, this is your mercy, this is your love, this is your kindness. So in the same way, this is how a devotee sees all reversals in his life. He sees that Krishna is the doer. Not a blade of grass can move without his sanction. The frustrations, the disappointments, and the pains and sufferings that come into our life is the love of God upon us. To purify our hearts, to bring us closer to the real standard of selfless service. We shouldn't react when Krishna either does it through material nature or does it through another devotee or another living being. We should not respond by throwing thunderbolts at them. We should respond like Indra by bowing at the lotus feet in the presence of Krishna's mercy and surrendering. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Because ultimately surrender means to surrender that ego. You can surrender all your material possessions, all your money. You could surrender your physical form to do whatever you're asked. But ultimately, it's all incomplete until we surrender our ego to Krishna. And what does it mean to surrender your ego to Krishna? It means, Krishna, you are the enjoyer. I am meant for your enjoyment. This verse of Mahaprabhu, that you can deal with me any way you please, I am your servant unconditionally, that is the principle of real surrender. And it is very difficult. And it can't be done by our own powers. It can only be done by the grace of Krishna. He can free us from the shackles of this egoistic way of thinking. And he will when he sees we are genuinely sincere. That is the one and only qualification. That we are humble and sincere. We are striving sincerely to be the servant of the servant of the servant of our Guru and Krishna. When Krishna sees our honest endeavor in this way, by his grace he frees us. And he will make so many wonderful divine arrangements to increase our sincerity, our humility, if we just accept it with a grateful heart. There is no doubt that Krishna will lift us beyond this realm of Maya into the eternal realm of loving service. Is there any questions?
Maharaj, this problem of ego or pride, which you are explaining it, it's very difficult to go out. It cannot go out from out. It is impossible for us. In a gross level, although it might go off, but in a subtle level, it is still there. And as you said, that you cannot do it by your own endeavor. It is only by the causeless mercy of Krishna and the spiritual master that we have any hope that this pride can go off. Now, this doubt used to be there in our mind, that although we spend our life to see that this pride just goes off, but we know that it's, after all, it's a causeless mercy of Krishna which is going to do it. We can't do it by our own endeavor. Now, if this pride doesn't go off from our life, that means we have not at all gotten the taste of spiritual life. We'll not be able to get that pure nectar which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying. And if we'll not get it from our whole life, that means we have wasted our life. And we'll not be able to get anything out of this life. And again, we have been there in repeated birth and that, and seeing all this problem which is there in this material world. So how to see that we at least will get one day or the other, one causeless mercy of Krishna, that this pride goes off from our life?
By sincerely following the process of Krishna consciousness, as Krishna has explained in Bhagavad Gita, and as the sadhus and the guru is teaching, by sincerely endeavoring on the path of Krishna consciousness, we obtain the mercy of the Lord. Ragadveshivamuktaistu vishayanindriyaischaran atma vishayabhidhayatma prasadamarigachchati. By sincerely and honestly following the regulative principles of freedom, that means the instructions of Guru and Krishna, one obtains the complete mercy of the Lord. And when His mercy is upon us, then we become free of all attachments and aversions. So simply, remain steady, remain faithful, and remain very careful to follow the principles of Krishna consciousness throughout your life. And it is Krishna's guarantee. Manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyajim nam namaskaru mame vaishyashi satyante pratijani priyoshi ananyas chintayanto mam yejana paryupashate tesham nityabha yuktanam yogakshemam bahamyam. We simply endeavor sincerely to follow the instructions of Krishna, coming through Guru, Parampara, then Krishna's promise is He will protect what you have and carry what you lack. He will bring you to Him without fail. Any other questions?
Why is it that the more you are striving to be humble, the servant of all the devotees, the more this pride that you are a master and controlling propensity seems to also increase? What is the reason of this?
How is that possible? You're saying the more you become the servant of the servant of the servant, the more your feeling that you're the controller and the master increases?
The more I'm striving, like we want to...
Sometimes that ego that is so deeply dormant within our heart starts to come out. As we oppose our ego by engaging in humble service, the false ego sometimes fights back. When you're satisfying the ego, the ego is very mellow, very peaceful. Yes, very nice. So you think, oh, I'm actually quite a humble person. Just see, I have no ego. But when you actually become a servant of the servant of the servant, the ego, you're directly attacking it. And it comes out like a vicious monster ready to devour you. Huh? So like that. Just like if you have an enemy, and you're doing everything the enemy wants, the enemy appears to be your friend. But as soon as you oppose that enemy, then you realize who he really is. Correct? So as long as we're just satisfying our ego and being the servant of our ego, the ego seems to be a nice friend, good partner. But as soon as you become the servant of the servant of the servant and you put your ego aside, then he fights back. Let him fight back. There's only one way to conquer him: by remaining the humble servant of the servant of the servant, and in that spirit to chant the holy name. The name of God can conquer all of these misconceptions if it is chanted in such a mood of humble servant. So you just go on serving and you go on chanting and let your ego say and do whatever it wants. Ignore it. Pay attention to what your guru has told you to do. Don't pay attention to what your ego is telling you. Kali is like that ego. As long as we don't oppose our false ego, as long as we're serving our false ego, just remains dormant, invisible. But at the same time, completely poisons our whole consciousness. But as soon as we start becoming a humble servant of Krishna and chanting the name of Krishna, Krishna is directly opposing our ego and then comes out like a million-hooded serpent. Rivo. Ready to destroy and attack us. But if we just go on being a humble servant, go on chanting the holy names, the name of God is none different than God, then we should know that Krishna is dancing on the heads of that false ego. Dancing, dancing, dancing. And Kali was not defeated immediately. Krishna danced for a long time. And little by little, the serpent was getting weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker until finally, he didn't die, he surrendered. This is the difference between Mayavad philosophy and Vaishnava philosophy. That by chanting the holy name of Krishna and allowing the name of Krishna to dance within our hearts, dance upon the hoods of our serpentine ego, ultimately Krishna does not kill our ego. The impersonal state ego dies. The Vaishnavas say no. The ego becomes so much defeated materially of its own ambitions that it utterly surrenders itself at the lotus feet of Krishna. So just keep chanting the holy names attentively. Keep allowing Krishna in the form of his name to dance within our hearts. And gradually, the ego will surrender. Jivera Swarupoi Krishna Nityadas. Yes?
I was thinking of what should be the limit of, you know, accepting whatever is coming from Krishna. If someone is being poisoned and it disturbs his behavioral pattern, it disturbs his intelligence, it even threatens his life, at that time, shall he remain inactive and say, Krishna, it is your mercy, whatever you want, my dear Lord, or try to come out of it of his own?
You have to, on your own, come out of it by enthusiasm for devotional service. If our own impurities, or if the attacks of Maya cause us to be complacent, then we are defeated. If they cause us to be despondent and inactive, then we are defeated. Then Maya has served her purpose very, very successfully. If you give up the fight, you've lost. Therefore, no matter what happens, we should never just lament and become inactive. We should never give up. We have to come back by surrendering to Krishna more than ever. That means action. That means increase the intensity by which we are endeavoring to chant the holy name. Increase the intensity by which we associate with devotees. Increase the intensity by which we hear the Bhagavatam. Increase the intensity by which we find out what our Guru wants us to do and do it more better than ever. Huh? The greatest enemy in spiritual life is egoism and lethargy. Krishna tells Arjuna, give up your egoism and lethargy. When your ego is not satisfied, our tendency is we want to give up Krishna consciousness. Or we want to give up the fight in Krishna consciousness. We just want to be left alone. No. No matter how bad things get, the more you don't want to associate with devotees, the more you utterly need to associate with devotees. The more you do not care to chant the holy names, the more you direly need to chant the holy name. The more you want to give up in the service that you're given because it's so disappointing and not according to your expectations, the more you have to give your entire life to the execution of that service. Huh? When you act like that, then Krishna takes you seriously. If you don't act like that, Krishna will not take you seriously. What does it mean to be sincere? What I have just said is being sincere. Being sincere is not just some ethereal sentiment that you think, oh, I am sincere because sometimes I cry. No. Being sincere means, come hell or high water, I'm going to continue my service.
Maharaj, when there is difficulties, problems, when Krishna is testing us, at that time, because we are with the association of devotees, we get that feeling that, okay, it is all causeless mercy of Krishna, and this is a test for my purification, and this is Dukhalayam, because this world itself is a Dukhalayam, and I have to just get out from this world itself. That should be my aim. That's why this Krishna is testing me in this way. Because we are in this association, that's why. That is the reason why we get this type of realization. But when everything becomes very calm and cool, means Krishna doesn't test us continuously for 365 days, He tests us only for some days. And then everything becomes very calm and cool. And when everything becomes calm and cool, although we are in the association of devotees, and the same philosophy has been given to us, that this is Dukhalayam, this is the problem, this is the misery, but yet we don't get that realization out of it, because in our practical life everything is calm and cool. So that realization we don't get it, and we are not able to get the full nectar of spiritual life, and we become very lethargic all the way. So how to see that although when there is calm and cool, everything is going very smoothly, at that time also we have that realization that anything, this is a danger at every step, this is Dukhalayam, and anything can happen at any time. How to see to it that?
A few days ago you were sitting in your office, calm and cool. Everything is very nice. I'm making some nice money. Everything is going well. People are nice to me. And then just downstairs. Do you remember that?
I was there.
That's what I'm saying. You were just upstairs, correct? You were calm and cool. And then what happened?
I was in calm and cool because everything was going very smoothly. So at that time I didn't realize it, that this is material world, this is Dukhalayam, everything. But when a bomb was blasted, at that time I felt it, that this is danger at every step. But at that time I wanted to see that this danger at every step phenomena should be there at 365 days. That I'm not able to get it.
Well, even the police have said that there are other bombs and they could go off at any time. Isn't that true? Haven't the police reported that? This is material nature. Remember that bomb and know that Maya has hundreds and billions of trillions of bombs everywhere, and any one of them can go off at any time. Correct? Therefore, you should remember this incident. Krishna gave you this experience to understand the reality of this material existence. That at any given moment, there are unlimited ways that suffering and distress and even death can come upon us. Padam padam yadvi padam natesham. It's danger at every step in this world. Therefore, we have to hear Srimad Bhagavatam every day. We must chant the holy names sincerely every day. We must associate nicely with devotees because they remind us that this world is not the place we really want to be. Mamupetya punar janma dukalayam ashashvatam. Napnavanti mahatmana samsidim paramam gata. Our only refuge, our only shelter is in Krishna. Eternally. So therefore, when everything is going very nicely, and everything is going very wonderfully, you should know that this is all Krishna's mercy to give me a chance to do nice service. But at any time, a bomb may explode. So I should be very, very much in the mood of Krishna consciousness. And every morning when you come to Srimad Bhagavatam class, you are being reminded that there are bombs everywhere, that only Krishna can save you. Rivo. That's why this place is called Bombay. The bay that has bombs. Yes.
Normally it is said that we have to become more sincere. And when Krishna is testing us, normally our attitude is that I have to control my senses, I have to become sincere, I have to somehow or other stay in devotional service. Normally in this procedure, our consciousness goes on increasing. Krishna is also saying in Bhagavad Gita that sarva indriyani sanyama yukta asit matparha. He is also telling that you control your senses. But we see that in Vaishnava songs, the acharyas, they are telling that, oh God, you come to rescue us, become the control of my mind, and come for my help. give me some power. So what is the difference between these two? I am not able to understand.
It is the difference between advanced Krishna consciousness and neophyte Krishna consciousness. A neophyte devotee, when that person controls senses nicely, preaches nicely, follows the regulative principles nicely, chants the holy names of God nicely every day, a neophyte devotee becomes proud. Just see, I am very advanced. I have followed these four regulative principles strictly for so many years, and I am chanting exactly 2 hours at least every day, 16 rounds of the holy name, and I am doing nice service. I'm bringing so many other people to Krishna consciousness by my preaching, and I'm making my tilak very attractive, and I'm wearing dhoti, and I'm wearing sari, and in this way I'm a wonderful, great Mahatma. And people should understand this, and gradually they are understanding this. This is neophyte consciousness. But if you continue like that, through the process of what you're doing, you will gradually become purified of that neophyte nense, that neophyte consciousness. When you start making advancement, you realize, I have no love for Krishna. I still have so many traces of sins within my heart. Krishna is so great and I'm so tiny and small. Who am I? I'm insignificant. If the mind even deviates for 1 second from the loving service of Krishna, you just think that you have a totally uncontrolled mind. The more advanced you become, the more humble you become. So when you start thinking, I'm a very good devotee, just that very thought should be the signal of your neophyte Krishna consciousness. The fact that I think I'm a good devotee is the irrefutable evidence that I'm nothing, I'm a neophyte. Huh? That is why we have to hear every day. We have to chant the names faithfully. And we need the guidance of advanced devotees to help us carry us through that egoistic nature that we have. If somebody praises you, if you have any humility in your heart, that praise will make you feel foolish. It will not make you feel great. If someone says, oh, you are a very good devotee, you should feel totally foolish. That, my God, how can he say that about me? Huh? If you think, yes, he has understood correctly, that is bad. The neophyte devotee, when he's praised, we think, oh, you have quite nicely analyzed the situation. And when you're blamed for something, oh, you don't understand. But a humble devotee is just the opposite. If someone praises you, you'll think in your heart, oh, you don't understand. And if someone blames you, you'll think, oh, you have nicely analyzed the situation. Huh? Yes. Due to Tulsi's association with Ananda Vrindavan, now she is asking questions.
Maharaj, you said that you should not have an expecting nature, like returns from the others. Like when you're doing the services and some god brothers or sisters who are cooperating with you, you expect some returns, you know, like doing the services properly with you. And you see that they are not doing it properly and you get agitated and become angry. And maybe you don't say anything, but in your mind you are offending that person, you know, like saying that why don't he does the service or why don't she helps me properly? Like she can do better to me. So maybe not, you do, might not say, but in your mind you are always offending, you know, and getting agitated. So what should you do at that time?
You should go on with your service, go on chanting the holy name. Gradually these things will go away. But in the meanwhile, to speed it up, with your good intelligence, you should know that they are my best friends for not reciprocating the way I want them to. Because by them doing like this, they are helping me understand what it means to be a selfless servant. That should be the intelligence weapon to defend itself against the mind's offenses. That it's not them, it's Krishna. They're such wonderful devotees, so loving, but Krishna is somehow or other putting them in yoga maya to be so cruel to me just because he wants to purify my heart. by making me a selfless servant. If they're giving me everything I expect in return, then I'm not really their servant at all. So Krishna is giving me the chance through these devotees to really be their servant without any expectation. And servant means no expectation. So that is how your intelligence should defend itself against the uncontrolled mind. But ultimately, by going on with Krishna consciousness and going on attentively chanting the holy name, all of these things will be Cheto Dharapana Marajanam Bhava Mahadavagni Minabhapanam. They will be removed from our hearts.
Just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Thank you very much.